normally when I prepare a talk, it feels really loud today. Normally when I prepare a talk, I read the whole thing and get a flavour for the sweep of what's going on, draw something out. This time, what God did was he drew into three particular things, and then I pull back out. So I'm not quite sure how this will fit together. So be prepared to give me some feedback at the end, because this feels a little bit unusual for me as well to do it in this way. As you know, we're in the Gospel of John, and we're in chapter 6 today. So you can open your Bibles if you like. Someone could shout out the page number in various Bibles. We are not going to look at all of it. There are 71 verses. We would be here until later in the day, so we're not going to do that. Let me just set it in a context. So if we go back a bit, chapter 2, we have the wedding at Cana, that first public miracle, and then the moneylenders in the temple court. Chapter 3, we have Nicodemus coming to Jesus at night and asking questions, and then John testifying about Jesus, who Jesus is. Chapter 4, last week, Matt talked to us about Jesus meeting the Samaritan woman at the well. And chapter 5, which we're not looking at, Jesus heals the man by the pool on a Sabbath and is then challenged for it. And now we're in chapter 6. I'm going to read just the first chunk. So after this, Jesus crossed over to the far side of the Sea of Galilee, also known as the Sea of Tiberias. A huge crowd kept following him wherever he went because they saw his miraculous signs as he healed the sick. Then Jesus climbed a hill and sat down with his disciples around him. It was nearly time for the Jewish Passover celebration. Jesus soon saw a huge crowd of people coming to look for him. Turning to Philip, he asked, "Where can we buy bread to feed all these people?" He was testing Philip, for he already knew what he was going to do. Philip replied, "Even if we worked for months, we wouldn't have enough money to feed them." Then Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "There's a young boy here with the 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what good is that amongst this huge crowd?" "Tell everyone to sit down," Jesus said. So they all sat down on the grassy slopes. The men alone numbered 5,000. Then Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks to God, and distributed them to the people. Afterward, he did the same with the fish, and they all ate as much as they wanted. So, Jesus has gone away to one of those quiet places. A mountainside is not going to be in the middle of the city. A bit like in other places, he goes away somewhere quiet to pray, or goes away somewhere to spend time with those close friends, his disciples. And a crowd turn up. Because it says, they keep following him. It doesn't say they're there at the beginning. They could have been, but who knows. But Jesus recognized this big, huge crowd. Now, if that crowd have been following around, and if they've gone to this hillside that's out of the city somewhere, and it's got late in the day, yeah, they might have been hungry. Getting up the mountainside, particularly in the Middle East, is not one of those easy things. Perhaps they didn't take any food with them. But there's this recognition that this pile of people had turned up, hoping for and looking for these miraculous signs and healings that they've already seen. They want to know a little bit more. So what happens? Well, Jesus clearly has a plan. The disciples don't know this. So he asks a question to Philip. And he says, where can we get bread from to feed all these people? What answer does Philip give? Which question is he answering? Perhaps an answer to where would we get bread from was all the shops are quite a long way away. Didn't answer that. The question that Philip answered was, how much will it cost us to feed these people? That isn't the question Jesus asked. He asked, where can we get bread from? He didn't ask, how much money have we got and how many people will it feed? He asked, where can we get bread from? Do you see, Philip was answering the wrong question. That wasn't the question Jesus was answering. And sometimes I think Jesus uses this as part of our discipling. Jesus is always about discipling. Discipling is about taking people further on, higher up and deeper in. It doesn't matter where you're at. It doesn't matter if you're one of this crowd who don't really know anything. They don't know who Jesus is. They don't know the truth, and they don't really have a relationship with him. Or the closer group that actually do know a bit more, but they still don't have the full truth. They have relationship. They know a bit, but there's more to go. And I think Jesus does this discipling at multi-layers and multi-levels and at different levels of depth all the time. So this morning, we're all here together. All of you will take away something else today that will take you higher up and deeper in. You won't all hear the same thing. You won't all be challenged in the same way. But yet discipling happens all the time. And I think when I came back out after what I looked at, that's what I spotted in this, is Jesus is discipling. He's drawing the crowds higher up and deeper in by showing them this something miraculous sign that points to God. And with the disciples, he's taking them higher up and deeper in a different way, because that's what they need at the time. So that was the big picture. So I've taken you to the big picture, and we're now going to go back down again. So Philip was answering the wrong question. He was not answering the right question. But Jesus then said he did it because he was going to test Philip, because he knew what he was going to do. Now, when we think of the word test, is it a positive thing? Nobody's saying, yes, I love tests. Actually, that's not what the word means in here. It doesn't mean he's going to test him. It doesn't mean testing like we saw Jesus tempted and tested in the wilderness. It's not the same meaning of the word here. The word of the test in the Greek, it can be a positive and a negative meaning. And in this one, it's a positive meaning. So our daughter, 3 months ago, started working in Costa. What they do is they do little bits of training and little bits of time. And then they just say, can you go and pull a shot? Can you go and make a cappuccino? Tell me how many scoops of this you put in here. They're not doing it to make her fail. They're not doing it to make her feel bad because of all the things that she doesn't know. They're trying to work out how far she is on her learning to be a barista in a good way, so that they know what else to develop her in. It's part of making her feel good that she's got this, but recognizing she still needs to know this, and great, I can learn. There's something else for me to get out of this. So they do it in an affirming, positive way. So this test is about Jesus working out, where is Philip at? What do I still need to show him? Where do I need to take him? So Jesus would have listened to the question, where shall we get bread? And heard the, he's still asking a very natural question. How can I do this in the natural? And that was Philip's answer. He was looking in the natural. Remember, Philip was at the wedding at Cana. He saw Jesus turn all this water into wine. Yet he didn't apply it here. He was still looking at the natural resources that were available. He didn't think, well, you've done water to wine, you can do this. He hadn't got that connection yet. Yeah? Now, when I thought about that, I thought, let me think about it in the natural. Maybe Philip had seen Jesus turn water into wine, and he'd seen healings. Maybe he thought, Jesus can do transformation. He can change this thing into this thing, and he can change this body from being one that's not whole into one that's whole. But he hadn't yet got the spiritual principle that Jesus can multiply. That could have been what he was thinking. So that could have been the discipleship point that he was making with Philip. We don't know. That was me, my conjecture. I wonder what was happening. Actually, it doesn't really matter. Jesus was taking it higher on and deeper in what he understood. I'm going to tell you something that's got me thinking and thinking and thinking. Now, my life group already know this because I shared it with them. But it fits with this. At the beginning of the year, I read something in a book. I can't remember. I should have found out so I could told you which book. And it was right at the beginning of the year. And it said this: many people think that they are physical beings having some spiritual experiences. Actually, we are spiritual beings having this temporary physical experience. And it's just kind of turned around the way I've thought about this year. Everything is like, oh my word, this is just the temporary physical now, and I'm worrying about all of this and thinking about this. I need to turn around, a bit like Jesus did with that question with Philip, and I need to say, actually, the eternal, long-going significance of this is spiritual. And I'm in the physical just at this, you know, just at this time, and it's temporary. And that's, again, that's what Jesus was drawing out with Philip, as thinking the spiritual. I don't mean over-spiritualize everything, but thinking the spiritual. Recognize who I am. Recognize what I'm doing. Put together the spiritual you've seen with the physical that's here. So Jesus taking Philip on a journey and recognizing a little bit more of who Jesus is, a little bit of who God is, and a little bit of who he is. A little bit of an aside. So Jesus turned this little bit of bread into more bread. So we're going to go back out to the crowd over here now. How is this part of their discipling? This wouldn't have been lost on this group of Jews that they have miraculously been provided with bread. Can you think of another instance that would have been familiar with them? They would have gone, oh, this reminds me of. Yeah. So Moses and the Israelites in the wilderness were provided with manna. This wouldn't have been lost on them. This is a little bit lost on us. It's not necessarily part of our history when we think about what Jesus has done in other places, you know, what God has done in other places. For them, the significance of that wouldn't have been lost. Yes, they were in this presence of a miracle that happened. We didn't have any food and now we got all of this. But there was a significance. They didn't know what it meant. And later on in the chapter is when Jesus talks to them and says, actually, yes, God provides this, but, and talks about, I am the bread of life. And yes, this physical bread is one thing, but there's a food of heaven that you don't yet understand. And I'm not going to talk all about that because there's another talk that's going to talk on the I ams. So I'm actually not going to talk about that, but just keep that in your head, that there's a bigger spiritual journey he was taking the crowd on, not just to show them he was God and he could do miracles, but that actually there's something more of their food from heaven that God provides for them as well as providing in the natural. So that was part of their higher up and deeper in that was helping them to seek more questions, recognizing there's more to it than just looking for God to give them an easy piece of bread. And another aside, the bread that Jesus turned, when it says barley loaves, this is the food of the poor. So Jesus didn't put on this high, fancy whatever. He didn't turn this bread that was here into something that was a banquet. Now, I'm not saying God isn't abundant. He doesn't lay out a table of a banquet for us. But in this instance, he just provided the food of the everyday that was there. And I think sometimes we expect God to provide something that's more than we want, and it's at this level. Actually, sometimes he just wants to meet the need that was there, because the key point isn't about the provision. The key point is about what he's trying to teach us. So don't look at the, I'm looking for this, because I know God is the God of abundance and we get great things. Yeah, we do, but sometimes his point is this. So don't be disappointed. Look at what he's doing. Okay, so let's move on from Philip onto the next bit. And Andrew pipes up with something to contribute to this dilemma, where he said, here is a boy and with five small barley loaves and two small fish, but how far will that go among so many? Now, there is a word of significance in what Andrew says here, and I would like you to turn to your neighbor and ask them, is your butt too big? Now, I'm not being rude. This butt has only got one T, okay? But it's a good question to get you thinking, isn't it? Because that's totally inappropriate to ask someone that normally, right? And you would never tell a lady that it looks like that. But actually, that's the key point in here, is Andrew says we've got this, but how far will it go among those people? They had something. They had something in their hands, but he couldn't see beyond the limited provision that was there. His vision was too small. Maybe his faith was too small. His picture of what Jesus could do was too small. He couldn't see the outcome. So if Jesus had left it at that, but we've only got this, and moved on, actually maybe this wouldn't have happened. Actually, Andrew was willing to do this, but he couldn't see the picture, but yet Jesus took it anyway. And Ephesians 3:20 says, "Now to him who by the power at work within us is able to accomplish abundantly far more than all we can ask or imagine." Jesus was asking Andrew to go beyond what he could imagine. What's the biggest number of people you have cooked a meal for in your home? Twenty-something, 30-something, 10, 5? Yeah? Have you ever been asked to cater for 5,000? Plus women and children. I can't quite imagine the amount of food that really should look like. I've done about like 25 and my surfaces and my cupboards and my fridge were a bit groaning. I can't quite imagine it. I imagine Andrew was exactly the same. You can't imagine it. They hadn't seen this before. This was kind of beyond what they'd imagined and what they'd experienced. So I couldn't quite see how this would work. Yet Jesus took that, "but we've got this," and turned it into this. How many times are there where you hold back for, "I really feel we could do this, but we haven't got the resources. But there's only two of us. But I'm not really very good at that. But I don't know enough about this. But I don't have enough time." Just be aware this week of how many times you say "but," and see whether that "but" is real or whether God wants you to do something different with it. And this is part of your discipling. We have a big God. This isn't about saying you should feel really bad because you say "but." It's about lifting your imagination to what God can do with what you do bring. He's put amazing things. Just look at the number of people here. He's put amazing things in this church, in these people, and in the resources and connections that we have. He can do amazing things in and through you if you take your "but" away. Yeah? The other thing that Jesus said, he says, "Where can we get bread?" He doesn't say, "Where can you?" or "Where can I?" This is a "we" thing. This is a corporate together thing. And Jesus might have broken the bread, but the disciples were involved with distributing it. They were at the heart of doing it. This is a together thing. When God doesn't go and do things, something is over here and we observe. He wants us to join in and be part of it. We have to get involved. And that's part of our discipling as well. The disciples would have learned through being there, singing, "Oh my, hang on a minute. There's some more. Hang on a minute. We only had two." Being part of distributing it and seeing the response of the people they were giving things to is part of their learning. It's part of their journey. So we have to get up and be involved and do things to go higher up and deeper in. So don't sit back and think everyone else can or everyone else does or they're all better, but. Get involved, yeah? Give what you can give. Use what you have got and see what God will do with it. I'm not giving you a hard time. I'm selling you the excitement of what you see God do. We've seen God do things when you just step up with the little that you've got. It's amazing. You don't do it. He does it. There's no pressure on you. You just have to turn up with your stuff. That's it. And then there was one little last bit that, again, I'm still processing that I'd never really thought about before. So all this bread has gone round. Everybody has had their fill. The disciples have got involved, knew some new things. The people have seen an amazing provision. That's finished, right? Nope. Because then Jesus says in verse 12, "After everyone was full, Jesus told his disciples, 'Now gather the leftovers so that nothing is wasted.' So they picked up the pieces and filled 12 baskets with scraps left by the people who had eaten from the 5 barley loaves." I don't think I'd ever really thought about this verse before. I kind of skimmed over, I looked at the miraculous bit and skimmed over to the next bit where Jesus goes and walks on water. Maybe I was doing the miracle, you know, I'm seeking after the miracles, but I'd never really thought about this bit. And sort of God just drew it out of saying, you need to think about this as well. And the Greek word for something to be wasted, I had a bit of a look at it. In some translations it says lost. And actually in lots of other places that word is used to mean perish. So that same word means to perish, which that's quite a strong word, isn't it? That's that kind of destruction and forever gone, not in a nice way, not just sort of quietly shuffled off somewhere. Perish is quite a strong word. And when I looked a little bit more, when it's referred to in this context, it actually talks about, you know, if you leave a piece of bread on the surface or something, that actually it decomposes. It's quite a sort of unpleasant, total loss of its usefulness. Now, all this bread was left over, having fed all these people. Had that bread totally lost its usefulness at that point? No. So why would you leave it there? That's actually not really using the fullness of what God has provided. Yes, it was an abundance, but that doesn't mean to say, fine, we've got what we need and we now move on. Actually, maybe God was going to do more with that. Maybe that went back to feed families who didn't have anything. Maybe the fact that someone took it home meant that they told the story about what Jesus did to people who weren't there. There was something else in what was left over that, had it been just left there, would have been lost. And I wonder how many times we finish this something we've been planning to do and then move on. But there was more to squeeze out of it. God had some more in it for us. I wonder if sometimes we have a vision and we get this far and then we move on. But actually, God had more out of it. And this is one that I really haven't had time to really think about because it's new to me, because I've never thought about it. So kind of, can I share this with you? And over the while, can you be having a think about it and come and tell me, look, this is what I've spotted. This is what I've seen in myself. This is my experience. I've thought about this, and please come and share it with me, because I haven't really thought about this enough. And then our broadband went off this week, so I couldn't actually investigate more and find out more and read more, because I couldn't read anything. And sometimes I need to read what other people have discovered rather than just wait for God to download. Sometimes that happens, but sometimes we actually need to use our minds and research. So I'd love to hear from you what else you get out of that. But I think there's a spiritual principle in this. Yes, God is abundant, but he doesn't want us to waste things. And this is not a hard push about you need to be good stewards, but actually to recognize that God has more in this. There's more that could get out. There are more people who could benefit from it. And maybe we're missing out as well as others, and we don't want that. We don't want things or people to perish just for the fact that we've moved on, or we've forgotten, or we haven't tidied up, or we haven't gotten the most out of it. So let's wrap it up so we've got time to worship at the end. This is about Jesus discipling, taking people higher on and deeper in. Multiple levels, doesn't matter if you're a person here today who doesn't know very much, doesn't really have a relationship with God, you've drifted far away, you don't really know much truth. You could get something out of just spending some time. It's multi-layered. Don't be afraid of questions. So when you feel God is prompting you or nudging you, don't just give your immediate answer. Turn around and look at it from a different side. Is that the question he's really asking you? Is that really the thing he's asking you to look at right now? Or have you answered the what instead of the where? Have you answered the what instead of the why? What is it that you're really being prompted with, rather than assuming that you should answer, this is always what I answer, or this is the question I think I should be answering, or I want to answer? Actually really explore what really is going on. And don't be afraid of questions. Get up and join in. It's part of your growing and learning. Your butt is not too big. Don't believe it, and don't let anyone tell you anywhere anything else. And don't leave anything to be wasted. And I've got one thing at the end. Remember the spiritual. So you are a spiritual being, albeit in a physical temporary experience right now, but you are a spiritual being. There's a spiritual stuff to look at in all of this. And a quote from somebody called Lang at the end. In the reckoning of man, there is always a deficit. in the reckoning of Christ, there is always a surplus